Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time to grab your gear and hit the road as we try and follow the entrepreneurs driving the e-bike revolution and the love stories of those riding along. And today, hey, we got one of the real players in the game here. We've got Zach Selby with us. Is that correct, sir?
That's it. You got it.
Not Shelby. I thought it was like Shelby Cobras, but it's Selby here, right?
Missing an H here.
Well, we'll add it in. What the heck? This guy is really one of the entrepreneurs driving this. You were one of the early adopters in this e-bike revolution, it sounds like here. So we're going to talk about this here. Zach has got not one, not two, not even three. You got five Pedego stores in Utah. Is that correct?
That is correct. Five of them as of right now.
How many more are you going to open? Are there going to be 50 of them someday here?
Hey, you know what? If business calls, I'll be there.
You're not adverse to it. You're not saying no. Well, let's talk about how you got there. You grew up here in Southern California in Thousand Oaks, was that it?
Yeah.
And worked for your dad. From looking at the notes here, he had something to do. You must have been up in the valley up there, so everybody was into aircraft parts and stuff. Your father had some sort of aircraft parts company, and so you started off with that. And you guys did work for like props and concept cars and all that kind of stuff. Talk about that. That must have been pretty cool to see all that stuff, because I'm into cars.
Yeah, it was always a little bit something different. Most of it was aircraft parts for military aircraft, which was always fun because you're always doing something different. But there would be occasions back in the day with like General Motors with concept cars, you know, doing these high-end.
The show cars, yeah, they bring them out,
so,
right?
Doing some of that stuff, and then did a lot of stuff with movie theaters or movie industry, Godzilla head, you know, things like that. So
yeah,
it was always something, you know, a lot of prop stuff. So it was a fun industry back then. It's definitely changed now. You know, they do most of it in-house now, but they used to outsource most of that stuff.
Yeah, so. I'll bet. And there were lots of part shops up in the valley. Everybody made some sort of parts, usually some really high machine thing that they couldn't, real precision thing that went into, I don't know, an aircraft or something. There were tons of those kinds of business. I don't know if they still are up in the valley, but
they are.
Anyway, so I'm familiar with that, having lived up in the valley and being in a car guy. I know they used to sub some of this stuff out, particularly the prop stuff, because I was in the Hollywood business for a while. Then you even got a chance to build some high-end carbon fiber mountain bike frames. Talk about that. Must have been early. That must have been the early days.
Yeah, it was early 90s, real early 90s, actually. And it was one of the first, if not the very first, hollowed carbon fiber bikes.
Yeah. So, right, because this is like what, the 90s or 80s or something like that, somewhere in there.
It would have been the early 90s,
yeah.
And it was the first bike I ever saw, and that anybody ever saw with had hydraulic brakes as well. So, and you could pick the whole thing up with one finger.
Yeah, so. I remember those days. All right, so after leaving your dad's business, you worked for that for a while. You decided, I got to go out on my own. I'm going to go sell cars. Why not? I've been around cars to see if I can do it. So you worked. You decided to move to Vegas, and you worked in dealerships for a while, it sounds like.
I started car dealership stuff in California for a while, and then the dealership I worked for got sold, and, you know, they brought in all new management, you know, one of those things. So
right.
I just wanted to change of pace, decided to move to Vegas with a friend of mine, and, you know, of course, no job lined up, no nothing. And
of course, yeah. Well.
Just went out there and did the exact same thing, found a good job, car dealership, moved my way up with that one, did it for quite a while. And, you know, just burned out like anybody else after 10 or 12 years in that. So then I went to work for a big office equipment company as a general manager.
So you've got the normal career moving up, yeah. You're changing industries, you're doing all this stuff. We've all been there. And then somewhere along the way, you came back and took over the family business. And so you're like back in Thousand Oaks Venture or something here and decided maybe I shouldn't be running a high manufacturing business in Southern California anymore here. Maybe I should move it to Utah. So you did, right? You took the employees and you moved it to Utah.
I did. My dad called me one day, asked me if I wanted to buy him out. Long story short, I said yes. Moved back to California almost immediately. Took it over, ran it for quite a few years. And it was good. It was just, you know, California is not the most friendly place for manufacturing.
Air quality emissions and all sorts of stuff. I am familiar with that. Yeah.
I knew the EPA guys by name for sure. So,
yeah.
We, you know, and a lot of the employees, you know, they rented apartments, they rented condos. They could never really get ahead in California. And it wasn't the lack that we weren't paying them well, but there were better opportunities. So I made the offer to them to either move to Texas or Utah. And mm-hmm. we all decided on Utah, and we all packed up and we went. So
there you go.
And here we are.
And what city is this in Utah? Where
are you? Salt Lake City, right outside Salt Lake City.
Okay, so you come back there. Now you got this going. How did you take a detour? How did you go down this other road called electric bikes? What you've got a business. What makes you want to do another business?
It's one of those things when you're in retail, I think, and you get away from it. I missed it, and I wanted to do something in retail. And as you know, well as the other business does, which I still run to this day, I lack that interaction with consumers, and I like being with people. So most of the aircraft stuff is all over the internet and faxes and emails. So
right.
I said, I'm going to do something. So I found a building and I rented it with absolutely zero business plan.
No business plan. You didn't even have a business. I'm going to hold this space and watch this space. Something will come here soon.
It was an old car shop with glass and wood ceilings, you know, brick wall. And it was calling my name. So I leased it, and the guy said, well, what are you going to do with it? You know, the owner. And I said, I have no idea, but I'm going to find something.
I'll find something. So you're thinking now through the years, you've kept this kind of car connection, bike crazy. It tells me that you rode BMX bikes and dirt bikes. Of course you did. You're from the Valley and from the time you were a little kid. But then you got into really the good stuff, Ducati motorcycles and other things here. Talk about those days. Did you keep that passion with you even when you went to Utah? Are you dirt biking it all over the hills out there?
Yeah. You know, nowadays I have a couple dirt bikes, but I've moved on to the UTVs and all that stuff. So right. That's never stopped. I did stop riding bikes for quite a while, actually, until I got hooked back up with Pedego, which was neat to get back into biking because I'd kind of given up on it. So,
and that's a common story. That's my story. That seems to be so many of the stories we hear. What is it about riding a bike that after a certain age, you say, I'm going to leave that behind me. That's kid stuff. That's for kids. Or sometimes they get really serious, but then I got to get the cross country. I don't know what they call them, the big fancy bikes that they ride, the Tour de France. They ride
big road bikes.
Road bikes, 100-mile rides. And so there are some people moving that direction. You got to get the funny looking little spandex shorts and all that stuff. But most of us somewhere along the way put the bike aside and never think about it again. What is it about riding a bike that we think is just for kids?
I don't know. You know, I think it's one of those things. But, you know, I rode my bike to school every day, back and forth from first grade all the way through, you know, until the day I got my driver's license.
But me
I think
too.
When you get your driver's license, you just kind of move on. You know, you've done the bike thing for so long, and, you know, then you just change your pace and you get your license and you kind of forget about it, I think, you know.
Is that what brings people, as we call ourselves aging baby boomers? I'm really one. You're not really an aging baby boomer. You're a little younger than I am here, but I was born in the 50s here. For us, it seems like when you add some power to it, it suddenly seems a little more interesting. I mean, it's not just that it helps me because I need a little help. Is it seem a little cooler than suddenly I got a little power assist? Is that maybe what brings us back to electric bikes at a certain age?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's word of mouth, right? That's the number one thing. You know, the neighbors, the Joneses buy them, and then they let their friends try them, and then, you know, it's a whole different experience than just riding a regular bike. It right. really changes the entire, you know, it's completely new. So when people try it, most people just have to have one and they have to do it because it is absolutely a blast. And people get exercise and they don't, you know, most aging people have a bad limb somewhere on right. their body. And this, it just equalizes. It helps it.
Everybody uses that word, the great equalizer. It gets me yeah. over the humps here. It gets me over all the excuses. But I hadn't thought about this to this moment. We had William Shatner on the show. I talk about it all the time. The guy's 90, and he was a big dirt bike rider and serious motorcycle rider. But he's 90. I can't do that anymore. So this kind of satisfies a little of that. He gets some of that off-road power feeling, that wee, as he says, when he hits the throttle. And yet, it also gets him out and active with his grandkids in other ways that he couldn't otherwise do. Couldn't keep up with them on their bikes. So, yes, there's a practicality. It gets out and it gets me in the open and the air and active again. I get back on the bike. But for some people, it seems to also satisfy a little bit of that need for speed, that urge for power that you once sought real good motorcycles and off-road vehicles. Am I making too much of it here?
No, you're not. I mean, like I say, you get on a normal bicycle, to most people, it's just not that exciting, especially after riding bicycles maybe their whole life. But they get on an electric bike, it's a whole new experience.
Yeah, it really,
and it really
is.
It's just fun.
It's that sweet spot between the bike that you... And yet I have many people come on the show and they say, it's exactly... reminds me of being a kid again. I'm on my... Schwinn banana bike here or something, you know, I'm bombing around, I've got little streamers, I feel like I'm a kid again here. So there's some of that to it. It seems to sit between that childhood memory of a bike and that adult memory for many people of power and speed, but I can't go that fast, I don't want to go that fast, and I need... So somehow it's an intersection between the two. I can't explain it. Give me help.
A lot of older couples find it to be something they can do together, right?
Yeah.
There's not always a lot of that. And this thing, it just, you know, they're on level playing fields, no matter who's in better shape or who has a bum knee, it doesn't matter. So
right.
You can go out and enjoy each other's time and go do something new. And that's what the majority of our customers are.
So what's it like? You've sold cars and you've sold other things through the years. What's it like selling an e-bike?
What I tell people, the funnest thing about this is, you know, I'm sure all dealers say the same thing, but it's that smile they come back with after they try one for the first time. And it's something, you know, it's an expensive purchase. You know, bikes aren't cheap, you know, whether it's a pedal bike or whether it's an electric bike. It's a big investment, but they're happy to buy this thing, you know, as opposed to like a car lot where it's a necessity. People have to buy one. They have to spend $600 a month on a car, you know, and it's not a joyful experience. But when they leave here, they're all smiles because it's something they're, you know, choosing to purchase that they're actually going to use for fun.
You nailed it perfectly. I've had so many dealers say this, and it still comes as a surprise to me because I haven't been out in the stores selling e-bikes. So I'm taking your word for it. I can see it when we talk to the customers. They keep talking about that instant smile, that instant feeling, I got to have one, I got to own one, this is cool. That Hello Fun slogan means something to these people here. But I guess what surprises me, I've sold things through the years from being a kid to other things. You sold office equipment. Did anybody smile when you sold them office equipment? Maybe they were grateful, but did they go, wow?
Not. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's got to be different to sell something where people not just buy it once, but then I'll ask you, do they come back? Because so many dealers say, I don't just sell them once and then never see them again. They come back over and over again.
Well, that's the thing. It's like they're like part of the family when they roll out of here. You know, they're all smiles. We're all smiles. And they come back. They buy more stuff for their bike. Of course, they realize, you know, I want to get this and that. And
they want to trick it out. I got to get the saddle bag.
They do. Right. And, you know, we're right on the trail. So people start here. You know, they'll drive their bikes to, you know, a lot of the stores. You'll park at the store and ride from the store and stop in, say hi. The newest location we have here actually has a pub built into it, so people stop here. And
Come on. You got a pub built into your store here?
Yeah, we got beer, we have wine, we have food. So people, you know, they'll stop here and grab something to eat or drink, you know, halfway point kind of thing, and continue on.
Well, that's got to be the new model for all the stores. You got to have a little pub here. I'm an Irishman. I had a little Irish pub a long time ago that I was part owner of, so I can appreciate that. And what's it like to have a connection to customers? I don't know that people – I can't think of any other product that you could sell where people stop in to say hi.
They do. They do. They come to just check things out, see if there's newer stuff, more accessories for their bikes.
Yeah.
You know, we know them all. You know, that's the thing. It's not like like a car where you shove them out the door and you never talk to them or see them again.
Yeah.
They come back all the time and just hang out, which is great.
You know? So do you take them on rides? Do you do that stuff? Many dealers do.
Yeah. So, you know, every store is a little bit different, but some of our stores do that, you know, tours. And we do group rides. This year, we're putting together two of the paloozas at two of the stores to get everyone together. So it's fun. You know, it's fun to get everyone together. And some of the customers even create their own riding groups through Facebook and connect with others. And it's really neat to see. You know, everyone's just happy. That's the best thing about it. Everyone is actually happy that buys the product.
So you still got this family business where you make machine high precision aircraft parts of some sort, and then on the side you're running over. Where are you spending most of your time here? Is this just a hobby, or has this become a passion here?
No, I believe it or not, I run it all. So I mean, I have some amazing people, and I wouldn't be able to do it without them. That is for sure. I go to the machine shop super early in the morning. It opens at 5 a.m., so I try to get there real close to that. And by about 9 or 10, I'm usually leaving and headed to the bike shops and doing my rounds.
You're the second dealer we've had on. The other guy was from Vegas. He's got a couple of stores like you do. And like you, he has a very successful other business. I forgot what it is. He puts on corporate meetings or something like that. Mm-hmm. Something totally unrelated to bikes.
Yeah.
But he fell in love with an e-bike. He said, I got to get into this. I see the potential of it. I love the product, and I love interacting with the people. And he's similarly got it. He opened one store and a couple mm-hmm. stores. Talk about that. What is it that you got to do this? Because I don't know many entrepreneurs that have two different kinds of business. So you might have two of the same, but you don't run a machine shop by day and an ice cream store at night.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how to explain it. Like I say, I started with no business plan, and it just really fell into place. Once I actually talked to Pedigo and got my way in the door and met with Dawn and Cassidy, I was sold on them and their product and their organization. And I opened the first one, and it did well. And I knew there was opportunity for more. So, you know, two and then three and then four and then five. It happens so quick. I don't know how it happened.
It mushrooms like that. Yeah. I just find that interesting that you're not alone. There are other Pedigo dealers who aren't just dealers. They started with some other business. They kept that business. They didn't sell that business to do this business. They somehow do both. That's not a story I would expect or that I would think I would hear very often if I talked to
The machine shop is all work, and I think of this is just fun.
There you go.
It's fun. You know, I'm excited to leave that machine shop every day and get to my bike stores because it's a lot more fun atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's doing well for you. Five stores. What's it like to run five? You don't have a experience. You didn't run five car dealerships or five machine shops here. It's got to be a challenge to run five of anything.
It is. I think you learn real quick from one to two to three to four to five, but it is a lot. You know, there's always something going on, you know, whether it be something to be fixed to the store or employee issues or whatnot, you know.
Yeah,
but,
it never ends, right? You're dealing with the public here. The public, most people are like, oh, my goodness. They groan when I want to get out of doing retail and talking to the public. You guys are rushing to do it. You needed that rush.
Yeah, it's the one industry, I think, where retail is doing really well, right?
So, yeah.
It's fun. It's challenging at times, obviously. Everything has its ups and downs. But it's been really good. You find the right people and get them trained and get them into place, and it makes your life a lot easier. And that's the hardest part.
So it seems like you must have been one of the first multi-store dealers in the Pedigo network, as this grew from just a couple of stores. From Don's dream, could anybody sell e-bikes? And he tried his own store, and then he said, hey, this works. This has got potential. How do I do this? He went to other bike shops, and they went, nah, we don't want an electric bike. We're into real bikes, you know, pedal power here. And so he's one by one, you know, we've talked to a couple of guys, Cassidy and Tom, some of these early adopters that started the first couple stores. But I don't know that anybody was thinking multiple stores. Was Don amazed when you came to him and said, hey, how about a second or third one here?
Yeah, it was an interesting, you know, I met Don. I flew out real early in the morning to meet Don before he left on a trip, before I opened my first one. I kind of told him what I had envisioned, that I was going to open multiple stores. And I don't know if he believed me at the time or not.
Sure.
You know, Don and I have a good relationship. And yeah, I'm not sure if I was the first one to open. I think there was a few that had a couple stores. I think I was the first one to maybe hit five. But yeah. When I first opened the first Pedigo store in Salt Lake City in 2018, I want to say there was maybe 50 or 60 dealers. And now there's, you know, well over 200.
Yeah, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So you obviously saw something that others have followed. You're not the only multi-store dealer anymore here. There are many that just... this is their second career, and they just want the mom-and-pop Main Street experience. And other entrepreneurs like you that see this as an add-on to other businesses they have, or just see it as their full-time business that they want to grow and go here. Where do you think this goes? Are there going to be Pedigo stores? Don's got numbers like, you know, 500, 1,000. I don't know. We're just
I think Don would love to see 1,000 stores, and I think it's possible, you know, as long as, you know, everything's keeps on going. I I couldn't imagine there not being 500 to 1,000 it someday. There's still plenty of territories out there for people to snag up and develop, you know, and, you know, there's new towns developing like crazy. So,
yeah. And what are you doing? I'm sorry. I was just going to say, what do you do in the winter? It does snow in Salt Lake.
It does. It's challenging. So we typically will close a couple stores for January and February and move some of the staff to some of the other stores. But the St. George store down south is close to Las Vegas, so the weather pattern is very different down there. That's actually why I opened that store, mm-hmm. just to kind of offset some of the cost in the winter. Mm-hmm. So it works out.
Okay.
It's slow, though. But we have a pub, so we can self-entertain.
Self-entertain. I like that. We just hibernate for the winter, and then we throw the doors back open, and here they come. Customers right. just right back again. Hey, we've been waiting for you here. Well, I've been waiting to talk to you guys ever since I talked to, was it your sister that was on the show earlier? And she and her husband, is it your sister that was?
Yeah, my sister, Kim and Greg. They're the Wee RV.
That's right.
They're out exploring the country, hitting every state.
And taking their pedagogues with them. And we were talking about it. They said, well, you know, we come by it naturally because my brother's got a bunch of stories. I said, we got to get him on. She says, I don't know. He doesn't come on and talk about this very often. He's just quietly, you know, building and going here. So we appreciate this getting you on the show here. I think you're a role model for others out there. If I can do one, why not do a bunch more here?
I appreciate it. No, it's been a good ride. It really has. It's been great. And pedagogues just... they're awesome to work with. Anything you need, they're there for you.
Well, it's been a great ride today, and I thank you for joining us. Zach Selby, one of the big guys here, one of the real entrepreneurs, driving it in multiple directions all at once while still running a aircraft manufacturing part. I still got to wrap my head around that one here. Thanks so much for joining us today here on the Pedagogue Podcast.
Thanks, Paul.
Well, there you have it, folks. We just find the most interesting people doing the most incredible things each week. You got to join us as we ride along with the entrepreneurs driving this movement and the love stories of those riding along. For more information, just visit pedagogue.com and join us each and every week on the Pedagogue Podcast.